From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Check out the new podcast, I Am Kobe. Do you want to understand how Kobe Bryant achieved his unequaled determination? How did he come to his incredible passion to win? In I Am Kobe, we reveal intimate, never-before-heard tapes of Kobe when he was a teenager, just as he was starting to glimpse his own greatness. It's about the making of an icon. We weave together these tapes with Kobe's high school coaches, his friends, and the figures who knew him in his youth. All episodes are out now, so you can binge the whole thing. Listen to I Am Kobe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, my name is Cassidy Zachary.
And I am April Callahan.
And we are fashion historians.
Yep, and co-hosts and the creators of the podcast Dressed, The History of Fashion, which is dedicated to investigating the significance of dress from throughout history and around the world.
And we are so excited to bring you a brand new season celebrating groundbreaking fashion figures and exploring the history of everything from corsets to blue jeans.
Dressed, The History of Fashion is available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your favorite shows. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
This is Jenna Fisher. I played Pam Beasley.
Hello, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here today. That's right. She's back. This is The Office Deep Dive, and I am your host, Brian Baumgartner. Today, I am so thrilled to be bringing you the second half of my conversation with Jenna. And this time, we are diving right in to the good stuff. That's right. The real reason you're all here, Jim and Pam, PB and freaking J. Now, over the years, Jenna and John have been asked approximately 8 billion questions about Jim and Pam's relationship. So I have to say, I almost didn't even want to ask them about it, but I did. And I was blown away by how interesting it was to talk about. Jenna, in particular, shared so many incredible insights into their relationship and what made it unique on television and why she and John are actually not a couple in real life. And trust me, they are not. Anyway, that is just the beginning. This conversation was so fascinating. As every conversation with Jenna is, I cannot say enough good things about her. So go ahead and welcome to your ear holes, Miss Jenna Fisher.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every moment left over from the night before.
I was literally laying in bed last night thinking about this. Like, if you think about The Office as like a person or a body or something, Pam was the heart, and your relationship with so many different people, well, with everybody, but really those three, you know, Jim and Dwight and Michael.
Yeah.
Obviously the relationship with Jim. Why do you think that relationship resonated so much with audiences?
Oh, I think it's the unrequited love. I think we've all been there. We've all been in love with someone who either didn't love us or couldn't love us, or because of circumstances or distance or whatever these things were keeping us from being able to fully express our feelings, the longing. And then I think, additionally, the clear chemistry between the characters, that you could see that they were meant to be together. And you just rooted for them.
Absolutely. But I think that there was also something about your performance and John's performance. You showed such heart and vulnerability that I think people were really rooting for you, whether they had found what they wanted to or not.
Well, I think both Pam and Jim are very good people. They're polite. It's one of the reasons why it takes them so long. And I think you always want the good guy to win. So I think you did want them to find one another and be together. It's hopeful.
Right. Nothing throughout the entire history of the show brought production to a screeching halt like a big Jim Pam moment.
It's true.
And I say that with love and also with utter frustration.
Yeah, we really, really cared. I mean, John and I would fight hard for what we believed. And we were usually on the same page with Jim and Pam. We were had like a singular mind when it came to Jim and Pam for the most part. There was often one Jim Pam moment per episode. And it was either where they're going to connect in some super special swoony way, or they're going to misstep in some way where one of them gets their feelings hurt. And there was this very fine line that we had to walk all the time. So, for example, shooting a scene over and over and over again where this time they can touch hands, but then we have to do one where they don't touch hands because it might be too much when if their hands touch. That might be going too far. Or do we end it with a hug? Or should he kiss her cheek before he leaves? Like, all of these little ways, how much were they allowed to literally touch one another, look in each other's eyes, swoon at each other? I mean, we would spend hours debating and shooting alternates of these Jim Pam scenes.
Yeah, and hours is not an exaggeration.
It is not an exaggeration.
No, but what's amazing is this wasn't like mystical producers in another land talking about it. This was you and John who
were we too indulgent? Oh, that was a trick question.
No, no, not at all. No, I mean, I think it speaks to the two of you as artists, but I think that there's also the camera as a character. And what I recall is you and John specifically with Greg or Ken or one of the other directors, you know, sort of two major questions. Who is seeing this moment? Is the camera seeing this moment? And how does that change my behavior in this moment? And those were the things that I feel like, well, brought production to a screeching halt.
This was one of the most fun elements of working on our show, was this camera as a character, because this idea that When you know the camera is filming you, it affects your behavior. It certainly affects Michael's behavior. When he knows the camera is on him, he performs for the camera. He does things like makes giant declarations and pledges of money to Oscar's nephew's walkathon in front of the camera. But then when he doesn't know that the camera is shooting through the blinds, he tries to talk his way out of it. So that is so fun to play. And similarly with Jim and Pam, how do Jim and Pam behave when they know they're being watched and observed? And then how do they behave with one another when they can't see the camera, when the camera is deep in the kitchen shooting through the blinds? I absolutely loved those nuances. Those were some of the most fun things to play with on our show.
Yes. Well, and when I directed, and I'm not just saying, well, when I directed to get in the fact that I directed, but there was a moment later on, season 8, Kathy, Lindsay Broad played Kathy, and Jim goes away to Florida, and Kathy's clearly trying to get the moves on him. It's taking place in Jim's bedroom, and we had to shoot. The only way to shoot the room was through the windows, because if the cameras were in the room, we would not have gotten the interaction between Kathy and Jim that we ultimately wanted. But then there was a phone call with
Pam.
With Pam that happened there. And I remember sitting in, you weren't in Valencia. You were probably home.
Did I not come? Because I have a very vivid memory of being there when Jim was a smug bedbug. Was that your episode?
Yes.
Smug bedbug?
Smug bedbug, yes.
I have a memory of watching Rain and John crack up as John was a smug bedbug.
I think that you came for the phone call, but we had a huge conversation about you were involved in what the interaction was between Kathy and Jim, because John wanted you involved and you wanted to be involved, and how that interaction, what that meant for your relationship with Jim.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it just speaks to everybody wanting to get it right.
Yeah. We cared on this show very deeply. Everybody cared very, very much. And I think that started with Greg. Greg's heart was in this show, and you could tell. And he delighted in getting it right. And we would shoot something, and we would all look over at the monitors at Greg and see if he was doing his little hand clap with his little smile. And he puts his eyes up in the air, ooh, you know, because that's when we knew we nailed it. And he was such a great barometer for that.
When did you start realizing or noticing that Jim and Pam's relationship was becoming so important to people outside? And was it infringing on your real life?
Well, realizing that my friend John and I couldn't go anywhere in public together as friends, or else people would lose their minds. They didn't know how to deal with that. They didn't know how. And even today, people don't know how John and I are not a couple in real life.
Right.
They don't understand it. And I don't know how to explain it, because it's a little bit like telling kids there's no Santa. It's like, I don't want to break anyone's heart.
Right.
So it's hard. It's
right.
It's really hard.
You should just explain that he's a real pain in the ass in real life. Why would you not just say that?
But that's weird. See, I feel like I have to justify why John and I aren't actually in love.
No,
and
I
the
know,
bottom
which
line is we were playing characters. But I know that if people think of us as John and Jenna, then it's destroying some of the magic of Jim and Pam. But I'm not Pam in real life, and he's not Jim in real life. And in real life, we're mismatched. He is perfectly matched with Emily, and I'm perfectly matched with Lee, and you know us all both. And in fact, I feel like if anyone wants to marry anyone, they want to marry Emily or Lee. They don't want to actually marry me or John. Is that a good description of why John and I are not a match in real life? Because you know us both.
Yes. I think that that's a great description. I also think, yeah, you both were playing characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you, and you've expressed today how different you are from Pam. And John is different from Jim. People perceive you to be that. Even, you know, if someone has a couple of minute interaction with me, they're not going to mistake me for Kevin.
Yeah. And I think that's so true of like Angela as well.
Yes.
Angela is like a bubbly cheerleader. She's your best friend in 2 minutes. She's so not the bitchy Angela Martin that she plays on the show.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time.
Oh, come on. But I do see how John and I, the line is a little more blurred.
Yes.
Like, you can have an interaction with John and I and think maybe that we really are just like Pam or just like Jim.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a favorite moment or moments between the two of you that you got to play together?
Yes. One of my first favorite moments is when we are up on the roof eating the grilled cheese sandwiches and you and Rain are doing the fireworks out in the lawn. And that was super special because we had this skeleton crew. Everyone had gone home for the day. And up until this point, we had mostly only ever been shooting in a big group in the office with lots of people. And here it was, just me and John on some lawn chairs. It was a summer evening, like a warm breeze, candlelight. Greg is up on the roof. Just a couple of crew members were up on the roof. And it was like so peaceful up there, the five of us. And then watching you and Rain, who I believe we had no way of communicating with.
None.
Yeah. Just setting off fireworks. It just all felt really real and lovely. So that moment is one of my favorite moments.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to edit out you talking about Greg and the other two crew members up there, because then you describing sitting there with John, that's why people think you're in love. That's so, oh, it's a warm summer breeze and we're sitting in lawn chairs on the roof. And
but some of it, like, it's true. Understand. It's like, you know, Matt Sohn is up on the roof and Greg is there and we're all just, none of us can believe we're on the roof.
No, I know.
And we had to take this, they had this old rickety, rusted ladder that was on the side of the roof that everybody else climbed up. But since John and I were cast members, we weren't allowed. So they like forklifted us up there on this, wearing a weird harness. It was very funny.
Yes. Were you worried when Pam and Jim got married that that was going to screw things up?
I wasn't, because we had been together now for a couple seasons.
Right.
So I think the question was, can they get together?
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
And be a stable couple. And will we still care? And I remember having a conversation with Greg where Greg was like, well, you know what's going to lose people is if we just keep manufacturing these affairs and these, you know, weird ways that we keep them apart. That's exhausting and it's not realistic. And so what we're going to need to do is bring them together and then give them obstacles to overcome as a couple. So rather than obstacles that keep them from being a couple, give them obstacles to break through as a couple, like Pam wanting to go to art school or Jim wanting to start his own business or having their first kid or whatever these things were, that they were going to have to weather the storm together, that that would be more interesting and more realistic. And people loved it.
I think that's so smart.
So smart. Because but he said, you know what's not going to be satisfying is if they get together at the end of season 9 after multiple affairs and like all this, like everyone's going to be like, yay, I guess, you know?
Right.
Congrats. I hope you enjoy your marriage with all your horrible baggage.
Well, totally.
Right?
That's so
That's
smart.
Not a happy ending.
I had never heard that. It's so smart.
Yeah.
It's a hard time for hiring, so you need a hiring partner built for hard times. That's Indeed. If you're hiring, you need Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring partner where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. And Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements, or else you don't pay. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites hoping to find candidates with the right skills, you need one hiring partner that can help you do it all. Indeed partners with you on every step of the hiring process. Find great talent through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. Plus, you only pay for quality applications that meet your must-have requirements. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Offer valid through March 31st. Go to Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive to claim your $75 credit before March 31st. Indeed.com/Office Deep Dive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Dutton.
And I'm Elizabeth Dutton. Oh, wait, sorry.
Zarin, do you want to say your name?
No, I'm good. Go ahead.
We're the hosts of Ridiculous Crime. People love true crime, right? The mystery, the intrigue, the human frailty.
Totally.
But what a lot of us don't like is the blood and the guts and the mayhem.
Wait. Some of us do like the mayhem.
Okay, but let's be real. There's nothing funny about murder.
Okay, that's right.
Our show gives you stories like the kidnapping of Frank Sinatra Jr. and the Max Headroom signal hijacking.
Oh, so you mean ridiculous stories like the UK cat shaver and Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos?
Yeah, stories like the dudes who stole Buzzy the animatronic whatever he was from Disney World, and the woman whose husband tried to kill her but came back from the dead and surprised him at her own funeral.
Yeah, that does sound good.
You can find this new podcast, Ridiculous Crime, all over the place. The iHeartRadio app, the Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. I don't know how you live.
Ridiculous Crime.
From Cavalry Audio, the studio that brought you The Devil Within and The Shadow Girls, comes a new true crime podcast, The Pink Moon Murders.
The local sheriff believes there may be more than one killer. It's been 4 days since those bodies were found, and there's no arrest as of this morning.
They were afraid, especially out in that area. What if they come back or whatever?
It scared me to death. Like, it scared me. I was very, very intimidated to live here.
Crazy to think you go to sleep one night, maybe snuggling with your loved one, and never wake up. Or maybe you wake up in a struggle for your life, which you lose.
Join host David Ratterman as he explores one fateful night when evil descended upon small town Ohio.
I'll
killed 8 members of an Ohio family in a pre-planned execution.
A family was targeted, most of them targeted while they were sleeping.
The Pink Moon Murders is available on February 22nd, and you can follow the Pink Moon Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so I talked again about sort of that emotional core, Dwight. Talk to me a little bit about the relationship between the two of you and how that changed and evolved. I mean, you were with Jim adversaries. He made you crazy forever. And then ultimately by the end, he says that you're his best friend.
Dwight does?
Dwight does.
Oh. You know, I think it's that first episode, The Injury, when Pam has that line, Dwight is kind of my friend. But I think there's other things, you know, Jim and Pam spend so much time teasing Dwight. And I think even go too far a few times in my rewatching of the show. I think there's a few times when we're like actually a little cruel to him that make me cringe. And I feel like, oh, that wasn't our best moment. But I appreciate because we allow our characters to, I mean, we don't all every day have perfect moments, right?
Right.
But it's so hard for me to think about Pam's relationship with Dwight without thinking about my relationship to Rain.
Right.
Rain is a deeply soulful person. He's also like a curmudgeonly old man. He's real cranky sometimes. And on set, he would be hilarious. Do you remember the time that he declared? Oh my God, it was so funny. We were getting ready to shoot and he said, hold on, wait, just hold on. Everybody hold on for a second. I have an announcement. Everyone, on Mondays, you do not need to ask me how my weekend was anymore. All right? Every single person asked me how my weekend was. Just assume it was fine. We were like, where is this coming from, Ray?
And I
talked to him about this and he goes, Jenna, that is not true. I said that on a Tuesday. I said, only ask me how my weekend was on Mondays. No more of this bleeding into Tuesday. Monday's enough.
He went crazy because, no, and I know what he was talking about.
I do too.
Because it's 5 o'clock in the morning and every single person that you pass is like, hello, good morning. How was your weekend?
Yes.
And what he was saying was like, you don't have to talk to me. We just saw each other on Friday night.
Yes.
We're good. Yes.
It's so true. So he would be like that guy on the set. It was like so funny. But then at the same time, in moments of deep crisis, I have phoned him. I had a job offer that was going to take me out of town and would uproot my family for a period of time that I really wrestled with the decision. I called him and he counseled me. He has that in him, a type of counselor. And I value him so deeply in my life. But then like he'll call me up and he'll be like, do you want to go to lunch? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, because you sound like you want to go so bad. Like, is it a chore? Or do you want to go? He's like, no, I want to have lunch with you. I'm like, all right, let's go to lunch. And then you go to lunch. And I'm just sort of like, are you liking our lunch? Are we having a good lunch? How are you? Tell me about you. And all
hello,
this.
Hello. Hi.
Yeah.
Hey.
So funny. But then, like, if I were to, do you know what I mean? So it's very much like the Pam Dwight, where Pam will, like, be like, oh, I love Dwight. I'm going to go say something nice to him. And then he'll just be like, Pam, something about knives.
Yeah.
Something about snakes or bears. And she's like, yeah, okay, right, okay. But so I guess I feel deeply loved by Rain. And I think Pam felt deeply loved by Dwight as well. Like they had a real bond. They really cared for one another.
Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's similar to your relationship with Michael, right? I mean, from where that relationship started and him fake firing you to him leaving and you having sort of that final moment with him. What did he say to you?
Well, it wasn't so much what he said to me. Paul Feig directed that episode, Goodbye, Michael. And we were at the airport and Paul Feig said, Jenna, I want you to just run up and just say goodbye to Steve, your friend Steve. This is your last scene with him. So say goodbye. We're not going to use the sound. We're just going to have a spy shot on you. So I thought, okay. So I ran up to Steve and I just told him all the ways I was going to miss him and how grateful I was for his friendship and the privilege of working with him. And I'm sobbing and he's sobbing and we're hugging and I didn't want to let him go and I didn't want the scene to end. And then finally, Paul Feig, you know, says cut. And he was like, Jenna, that was brilliant. Can you do it again, but just a little faster? Because it had been like 5 minutes. He was like, we just need to tighten it up a little.
Because they wanted him to actually walk away.
He had to go eventually. So
they had one camera. Yeah. So there was only one shot.
It was a one-er.
That they couldn't edit.
Yeah.
And so, that is so great.
Yeah, he was like, just tighten it up a little. But sweetie, great job. Because he could tell I was like sobbing.
Yeah, in thinking back, honestly, Steve leaving to me was almost more emotional than the show ending.
Well, the thing is that it wasn't just the character of Michael that we were losing. We were losing the captain of our ship, Steve Carell. And I don't think that I can say enough how important him as our leader was, because just the kind of man he is, his work ethic, his kindness, his generosity, there was no ego. And to be led with that, along with Greg's heart, it was very frightening to me that we were losing him. He was our compass that pointed us north and kept us all in line. And I really worried, what's it going to be like on set without him? We just all agreed he was the most important person on set, and we always wanted the day to be easy for him. He had the most lines. He had the most work. He had to drive the show. And we all just collectively were there to support him. And he was so generous. I mean, I remember directors would come in who were new and they wouldn't be able to find Steve, but he'd just be sitting on the couch by reception. We'd be like, oh, he's right there. Because he was he wasn't like a, and I'm here kind of guy, you know?
Right.
He was just, and I say this because after working on The Office, I've worked on many projects where this is not the case. And I see how that infects a group of people when there is someone who is leading the ship who is insecure and needs a constant ego boost. And it makes me even more grateful for how Steve was and how he is still. I also remember Will Ferrell coming in and guesting with us. And then I've done movies with Will Ferrell, and he's the same way. And I always thought, wow, they really have a competition for like greatest person to work for, work with.
Right.
Steve and Will, just like nicest man in Hollywood.
Right.
But so my biggest fear was even just, what is the onset vibe going to be like without Steve? Not to mention, what stories are we going to tell? Who are we without this leader? And I'll say it here, and this is the only time I've ever really publicly said this, but it's always disappointed me that we didn't trust in our core office group enough to continue the show without bringing in what I think we thought we needed, which were these big guest actors to fill Steve's shoes. And I always felt like fear drove some decisions to that. I don't, does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah.
I always wondered just what would that season have been like what we then got with season 9, where we said, no, we're enough. The bench is deep enough.
Right.
The talent is there. We can keep the ship afloat with what we have.
Right.
I don't know how you feel about that season 8.
No, I hear what you're saying. I think that there was fear. And what would happen if we didn't have someone else helming? Because being the boss changes the character.
Yeah.
So Dwight as the boss is not Dwight.
That's right. Dwight is the character who wants to be the boss.
Correct.
Who's always angling to be the boss, but who does not actually have the authority.
Right.
So if you make him the boss, then who is that guy? So it does make sense that they felt like there needed to be a
and
boss.
Andy,
and that was
as
the
well.
Question, who should be the boss?
Well, right.
This was the conversation.
Right.
Who should be the boss? I mean, I remember being up in the writer's room and people asking me who I thought should be the boss. And I was like, guys, I don't know. I don't know who should be the boss.
Right.
They
right.
were still trying to get like anybody's opinion. Like, does anyone have a perspective on this?
Well, and I think as a character, it was Jim. I mean, I think Jim was the most, I mean, he was lazy. He was
the most well-suited on a technical level should be promoted to that job.
Correct.
Right.
Yes. In terms of his interaction with people, his ability to lead and sort of inspire people. But I think then that messes up storylines in a way that they don't.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I guess, when we get back to this, it is like, okay, well, we need some other force of nature to come in and be the boss of these people so that they can stay being them.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. That was tricky, but we made it through and we got some great episodes that season.
Yes.
And then we went into season 9 where we sort of just didn't have a boss for a while. Remember? Andy was our boss, but then he got lost
he
on the
gone.
Boat and
yes.
then we just sort of... We were like, oh, here's an answer. Just, it's an empty office.
There's no regional manager anymore. What did you think about bringing the sound man, breaking the fourth wall and bringing Brian onto the show? Was there a conference? There was a major conference.
Many
about
conferences.
That. Many,
many
hour-long conferences.
So for season 9, John and I were producers. We were given those titles because we were brought in to really discuss the Jim Pam arc of the final season. And so we spent a lot of time up in the writer's room talking about all the beats of that story and what it would be. I did many on-camera auditions with various Bryans to be the boom operator and then many discussions about who exactly it should be. There was this one actor who was just phenomenal, who just looked so much like John Krasinski that we had a whole discussion about whether or not he should look too much like John Krasinski, if that would feel like Pam, you know what I mean? And like all this stuff. And so anyway, I liked that storyline. I thought it was really interesting because another part of season 9 was that we were going to release the documentary, that you were going to see how it affects these people's lives, for them to see themselves in a documentary. And I think that's really great closure for the show as well.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I think it was an underrated ending of the show. I felt like Greg very clearly had a story that he wanted to tell.
Yeah. And I think that when you're live, that your anticipation, there's almost nothing.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Thing that can meet your expectations. But I think if you go back and you watch it, you see just the brilliance of how he tied it all up.
Yeah.
Truly.
When did you find out that Steve was coming back for the finale? Did you know early on?
I feel like I almost always knew because John and I had been up in the writer's room talking about the finale and we were sworn to secrecy.
Okay.
So I feel like I knew for a pretty long time. And I knew that there was a lot of trickery going on, that he was not written into the final script. At the final table read, there was a scene between Dwight and Steve, but it was written between Dwight and Creed, and Creed read the lines at the final table read. And that was because they did not want anyone at the network to know that Steve was coming back. It was a huge secret.
They didn't want NBC PR to, like,
yeah,
to blitz tease it.
Yes. And to ruin the surprise of, yes, Steve being in the finale.
Yeah. What's your memory from that? Were you more laughy or cryy, like in the table reads?
Oh, I think I cried a little bit every single day. I was a crier at the table read. I was crying. That was really emotional, that last table read. Chris Workman, our camera operator assistant, took a photo of that last table read that Angela has blown up in her house on her wall. That is fantastic, of that last moment right after we said the last line. And then I remember that Pam has the last line of the show. And they had originally scheduled it so that that would be the very last thing we shoot. And I think it was John or some other people said, oh, man, well, we don't all want to be wrapped. And then Jenna has this talking head. And Greg said something like, oh, yeah, yeah, we got to have the last scene be with everybody. And after I finished my talking head, we shot the B-roll of me taking the picture off the wall and all of us walking out the door. And we did it, I don't know how many times, 5 or 6. But we would take the thing off the wall and all walk out. And then we would all stand off camera by the elevator.
Yep.
All of us, many of us, crammed by this elevator. And there would be this moment where we would wait to see if they were going to say, cut, going again, or cut, that's a wrap. And I'm, yep, getting choked up just thinking about that. Because those seconds of waiting, and every time I just wanted them to say, cut, going again. Because I knew when they said, that's a wrap, that that was a wrap. That was it. I'd never shoot The Office again. And when they said, that's a wrap, I just burst into tears and started hugging the closest people that I could find. And it was just really, really crazy and emotional.
Yeah. Will you play that?
I thought it was weird when you picked us to make a documentary. But all in all, I think an ordinary paper company like Dunder Mifflin was a great subject for a documentary. There's a lot of beauty in ordinary things. Isn't that kind of the point?
To me, that's what Greg thinks it was about, that there's a lot of beauty in ordinary things. What do you think it was about?
Oh, Greg Daniels. I think that's what it was about. Yeah, I do. I also, I always thought selfishly, because it was my job to view the show through my character, it's not lost on me that when Pam was ready to break free of Dunder Mifflin, the show ended. So I always kind of thought it was the journey of a girl becoming a woman, finding herself, going out into the world. When we meet her, she's trapped behind this desk. And she sort of slowly moves to sales and then finds the man she loves and starts this family. And then when she's really ready, she really fights against leaving. And then when she's ready to go, it's all over. Because the documentary doesn't stop when Michael leaves. So it's not really a documentary about Michael Scott.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they decided to stop making the documentary when Pam leaves.
That's so interesting.
From the creator of The Bright Sessions comes a new fiction podcast for all ages. Jump back to 1997 and follow Maxine Miles as she starts high school in the picturesque town of Hastings, New Hampshire. Fall is the season in which this small town shines. Apple cider, pumpkin patches, farmers markets. It's idyllic for adults and boring for Max. But suddenly, Max's school year starts to look a bit more interesting when a fellow student vanishes. With the help of her misanthropic classmate, Ross, Max starts to look into the disappearance. Her investigation draws her deep into the dark woods around Hastings and even deeper into the secrets and lies that course through the veins of this sleepy town. This new YA mystery from writer-director Lauren Shippen is an audio drama with heart and wit that involves the audience in a way no fiction podcast ever has. Listen to Maxine Miles on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Hi, I'm Glory Edom, host of Well-Read Black Girl. Each week, I sit in close conversation with one of my favorite authors of color and share stories about how they found their voice, honed their craft, and navigated the publishing world and composed some of the most beautiful and meaningful words I've ever read. We journey together through the cultural moment where art, culture, and literature collide and pay homage to the women whose books we grew up reading. And of course, I check in with members of the Well-Read Black Girl Book Club. It's the literary kickback you never knew you needed. And you're all invited to join the club. So tell your friends to tell their friends so we can be friends who love books. Listen to Well-Read Black Girl on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever felt depressed about work, only to have your dad be like, "Why are you so down?" So you told him you hate your job, and he said, "Well, you better talk yourself out of it." And then you thought, I love to talk. I could host a podcast. And then you went to Spreaker from iHeart and started a podcast and got good at it, then monetized it, then quit your boring job, then told your dad, "Thanks for the advice." And he was like, "Well, that's not what I meant, and I don't understand what a podcast is, but you seem happy, so that's great, kiddo." You ever do that? Well, you could. At Spreaker.com. That's Spreaker. Ask your dad. Yeah, actually, don't.
Do you think The Office could be made today?
No, I don't think it could.
Why?
Well, I don't know if it could be made today. It's a good question. Well, first of all, something I want to point out, or a question I want to ask you is, people always ask us if we're all really friends in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think saying that we're friends in real life accurately communicates how deeply I feel for you and everybody. It's like a love of family. Like, I can't explain it. Do you think if we'd made this show in the age of smartphones and whatnot, that we would be as deeply connected? Like, don't you think, like, the circumstances of us being trapped on that set for the first season with no working computers, no phones, no internet, nothing, just a troupe of actors and artists trapped in a room for 12 hours a day playing. We never absorbed ourselves in our phones or emails or other work or anything. And I think that that lent itself to part of the magic. And I just wonder if you tried to put us all in a room today, I don't know, wouldn't we just have our phones and our desks?
I think that maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. I think that we, for sure, what I think is we were a collective group of people with differing backgrounds and experiences and training. It was like we were an old-time theater troupe.
Yes.
Stuck together. And we weren't all famous.
No.
We came from a place of just wanting to do good work.
Well, when Lee and I got married, I had invited a girlfriend of mine that I'd gone to high school with from St. Louis. And she was so excited to come to the wedding. And she said, are there going to be famous people there? You know? And I said, no, not really. We're not really friends with a lot of famous people, you know? And then she's like, well, are the cast members from The Office going to be there? I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, they'll be there. And she was like, well, they're famous. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. But even now today, I don't think of us that way. I still always think of us as the people in the room before anyone cared or yes. anyone knew who we were.
Totally.
And so being on that journey together as well, I think really bonded us. But I don't know if we could make the show today. It's really hard to say. It was such a moment in time. Can you make a show today with total unknowns?
I don't know.
Silicon Valley, kind of? There's other shows.
Well, let me ask. Why do you think the show is more popular now than it was when it was on?
My answer is very simple. The show is excellent. It's excellent. It is absolutely brilliantly executed, and it holds up because it's just that good, really. But you know, it's funny. I started this podcast with Angela.
Yes.
Where we watch an episode of The Office. We started from the beginning.
And Office Ladies.
Yes.
Yes.
We break it down. This was not a plug moment. I was going to
We were about to go there in a minute. No. But anyway, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is, Angela and I are doing this podcast and we have to watch an episode of The Office and then we discuss it. So I've been watching the show from the very beginning.
Had you watched the show since they aired?
No.
You had not?
I had seen a few here and there. I had seen the dinner party. I had been in a trailer on a job and I had a teeny tiny television mounted to the wall of my trailer. It was so small.
I'm not joking right now. She just held up her fingers and showed 3 inches.
I did.
Don't think the television was three. No, now it was more like 5 inches.
It was smaller than a laptop screen. It was very tiny.
Okay.
And that's what she said. I was so tickled by it that I took a picture and I sent it to Steve and John and Ed and Angela and all of us who had been in that scene, where we were laughing so hard at Michael's tiny flat screen TV. And then that made me want to watch that episode. So then I went and watched the dinner party episode. And then a few examples of things like that, where you're flipping through and an episode comes on or something like that. But no, I have not seen most of these episodes since they aired.
Right.
So it's been really cool for me. And I have to say, I really get why people are so excited about the show. Like, as I watch it again, I'm really watching it almost as a fan.
Yes.
And it's weird that I'm on it in some ways.
It's weird
that I'm watching myself.
I've always thought it was weird that you were on it.
Oh, really, Brian?
Yeah, I always thought it was.
Is that a fact?
I don't know.
But before I started doing that, I was on Greg to do a reunion special or revive The Office in some way, selfishly, because I just want to work with all you all again. And because I know Steve has a really good idea. And I thought, oh, let's get Steve's idea going. Come on, Greg. You got to do it. Well, now that I've been rewatching the show, I wrote Greg an email recently. And I said, Greg, I don't think you should reopen the show. It is so perfect, just as it is. Like, I don't think we should now. I was such a champion for doing it for so long. And now I'm realizing maybe it's exactly perfect just as it is. And you don't want to have this weird extra 7 years later episode that we made. I don't know.
Well, see,
here's the beauty is episode.
Here's the beauty is I have the ability to edit out whatever I say right now.
Uh-huh.
I have no interest in it.
In
a reunion episode. Mm. Yes.
But have you heard Steve's idea?
It's a great idea.
It is a good idea.
It's a great idea.
What if we did it in Scranton, Brian? What if that's the thing that we come back for is we shoot an episode finally in Scranton, Steve's idea.
All right. Well,
we'll
discuss it later.
But at the same time, I think the show is just perfect as it is. Although we do have an unproduced episode, Pet Day. There's one episode of The Office called Pet Day.
Well, it wasn't shot.
That we never shot.
Yes.
That's right. I have the script.
I have one, too.
You do?
I have one, too. In fact, I signed scripts, obviously, to give away to charities.
Yeah.
I have a gigantic box of scripts that...
Because
we would get multiple per week. It was not great for the environment. But we would get and they're in my garage in boxes. And I reached in and grabbed one, and it was Pet Day.
Pet Day.
And I thought, what if I had signed that? And I mean, thank goodness I looked at what the title was.
Yeah.
Because that could have been true. I could have gotten in trouble for that.
Well, I said to Greg, what if we do a special where we just do a staged reading of Pet Day? And we all come together and we read Pet Day.
But wasn't there a reason we didn't do Pet Day?
Animal cruelty? I believe was the reason we didn't do Pet Day, because there's like some awful bird death in it or something. I can't remember.
We ended up having a bird death a porcupine in Dwight's desk.
We did.
And
Angela throws a cat in the ceiling.
And Angela throws a cat and one gets frozen.
Yeah.
And no, there's Greg must not like animals. Is there anything else? Anything else that you want covered that you feel like we didn't? I mean, obviously, there's so much.
I know. I don't know.
But you did. You were very good.
Can't think of anything, really. I think something that's really interesting to talk about, too, because you talk about how there were, like, the theater people and the comedians, and then there were the improv people. But there were also all of these ways that we were weirdly connected. Like that Phyllis and I both grew up in St. Louis, as did Ken Kwapis. He grew up in Belleville, Illinois, which is basically St. Louis. And then also our AD, Rusty Mahmood, grew up in St. Louis. So there were four of us St. Louisans. Then there were a bunch of those Boston guys. You've got John and Steve and BJ and Mike Schur.
Yep.
Then the fact that like BJ and John went to the same high school. Angela,
and Ed and I went to the same high school.
Yes, you and Ed went to the same high school. And Angela and Oscar were in an improv group together.
Yes.
And she walked on set and was like, oh my God, Oscar, you got cast in this?
Right.
It was a complete shock to her. She'd done improv with Kate. So there were these ways where we'd all been kind of circling each other in this weird way. And then all finally came together. There were so many coincidences in how we were connected.
Totally. Yes. I remember shooting a scene for a webisode and was in the annex, camera on me. I was shooting a talking head and suddenly I saw Ed Helms walking behind the and I was like, Ed, what are you? And he was there to meet with Greg and about joining the show. This was between season 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's crazy. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I love you.
Oh, Brian.
I appreciate you coming in.
I
hope this has been some fun.
I could talk for hours about our show.
I
love that you're doing this because I want to hear what everybody says.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Love you.
Oh, I love you too,
Thank
Brian.
You. That is a wrap on Jenna Fischer here at The Office Deep Dive. Jenna, thank you so much for sharing your time with us. I mean, look, I didn't want to say this to your face, but I think that we all know Kevin was the real emotional core of The Office. I mean, you can keep thinking Pam, but I say it's Kev Dog. But you were so great here, I'm going to let you have it. I'll even forgive the fact that you're a Cardinals fan. Go Dodgers. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us, even all you Cardinals fans. And get ready, because next week, oh, it's the big one, folks. It's the big kahuna, the big cheese, the big guy upstairs, Steve Carell. Have a great week.
The
The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our associate producer is Emily Carr. And our assistant editor is Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend Creed Bratton. And the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
Hi, my name is Cassidy Zachary.
And I am April Callahan.
And we are fashion historians.
Yep. And co-hosts and the creators of the podcast Dressed, The History of Fashion, which is dedicated to investigating the significance of dress from throughout history and around the world.
And we are so excited to bring you a brand new season celebrating groundbreaking fashion figures and exploring the history of everything from corsets to blue jeans.
Dressed, The History of Fashion is available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your favorite shows. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Hey, Dana Goodyear here. Have you ever wondered how a true crime podcast like Lost Hills gets made? How we unearth secrets and tease out the truth? And deal with complicated characters while tackling sensitive subjects like violence, trauma, and deception? Now's your chance to find out. Join me and Jake Halpern, host of Pushkin's Deep Cover podcast, on March 16th for a digital conversation on true crime storytelling. Get your tickets now at momenthouse.com/DCLH. That's momenthouse.com/DCLH.
I'm Emmy Olea. On this podcast, I'm taking you on a search for love.
Emmy, 24, hardworking Latina.
But there were other reasons I felt like I couldn't always be myself.
My mom's in prison.
This is Crumbs, my love story. It's a show about the things we settle for and the bits of ourselves that make us who we are. Listen to Crumbs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air and we are underway. The Great American Race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.